Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a really, really exciting day in the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius Clearing. I'm Chris, what's your story, Grimes? And have I got a story for you? Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome, he's just told me the story behind the story of this, which I know he will tell us even more about, One Shot Gotts. This is Andy Gotts, who is, you may not know this yet, but you will soon, he is Hollywood's favourite photographer. Anybody you can think of that you'd like to photograph in a really truly original, iconic black and white style, Andy Gotts has already had them behind his lens and they're in the shutter and stored, you've just told me very enigmatically, in some sort of archive that requires you to run perpetually a VPN. Do you want to just tell us a bit more about that, Andy?
Yeah, it's an insurance policy, quirky quagmire of a stupid thing. It's because in the good old olden days, I mean, I've done this 36 years, but the first 21 years, I only shot film. That's all I shot. Then in about 2009, I started shooting digital because I had to, because of Al Pacino. Anyway, I'll tell you that later. And so everything since 2009 is a not a physical thing in your hand anymore. It's now a thing on a drive that can be lost. So now, because of insurance, if I want to insure my backlog, my collection, everything digital has to be backed up 3 times every hour. It has to be sandboxed 3/4, and the other quarter has to be permanently VPN'd. Ridiculous.
What an extraordinary problem to have, and that is because you have an absolute archive to literally die for. It's a fantastic, phenomenal gallery and glitterati of stars. I also know, and please do get on the open road and tell us about this, in 1995, I believe it was, you made a dream list, I think, of 150 actors you wanted to get in front of your lens. And then I'm so happy to have got you now, because I think only at the beginning of this month have you completed your list, with Gary Oldman being the last one, with Gene Hackman, who I think died just before you could get hold of him. But just tell us the story, Andy Gotts, of your extraordinary path, journey and trajectory to now, because it's an extraordinary story.
Yes. Yeah, so literally, it was 1990 and I went to college, and it was in King's Lynn in Norfolk, and I was doing this photographic course. It was a 2-year course. And I then fell in love with photographing portraits and then celebrities. And I left college. I started doing a bit of Sunday supplement magazine work and knocking on doors and showing my portfolio around. And I started getting, you know, a few people. And I thought it'd be really nice, it'd be lovely to be able to have a entire collection of portraits. So I wrote 300 letters to 300 actors, and after 6 months, there was not one response. There was nothing at all. And I had a phone call one day from Joss Ackland, and he'd just done Lethal Weapon. And he said, "Hate being photographed, loathe it, but if you come to Clovelly and shoot my son's wedding, at the end, I'll do a photo shoot for you." So I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose, you know. Yeah, it's the first one. So I've never done a wedding before. I didn't know what to do. So I went down and I said to the happy couple, "I'll do a documentary. I won't do anything posed. I'll just do a documentary." And they were happy with that. Then I shot Joss Ackland at the end of the... He's very tipsy by then, obviously, being the father of the groom.
Yeah.
happy and jolly. So I've done some lovely pictures of him. And then because it was a 6-hour drive from Norfolk to Clovelly, he said, well, stay the night and go home tomorrow. So I kept on his couch. And the next morning, the family had flown, and it was him and his lovely wife, Rosemary. Obviously, they're both now departed, unfortunately, but Rosemary was there. And Josh said, so how's the project going? I said, it's not. It's rubbish. You're the only person to wave a little flag to say yes. He said, I'll tell you why. The letter you sent to me, there was no direction. There was no call to action. He said, can I photograph you? He said, you need a theme. You need a reason. And I said, but I cockily said, well, like what, Joss? And he said, well, what do you do? Who shagged who? And I said, I don't think many people will, you know, say yes. But at that time, it was the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon was then starting. So I said, why don't we do the who knows who? And so he threw me in the direction of Greta Scacchi. And that's how the wish list of it was 100 people I put, yeah, they started to be checked off. Yes. And literally within the first 7 years, I'd shot, I think, 96 of them.
Wow.
And there's a few that were on there. And then it got to this year, and I knew I'd never get Gene. I knew that because I know people who knew him, and I didn't know about his dementia. I didn't know how poorly he was. I had no idea. But I was told by numerous people, you know, but it won't happen. And then unfortunately he passed away. And the only person left on my list was His Lordship Alderman. And I've approached him over the years, I don't know, for probably about 12 times. And he has a one man who looks after him. He's like his guru. He's his best friend. It's his manager. It's his publicist. It's his everything. His name is Douglas Zabowski. Whenever you see anything to do with Gary Oldman, whether it's Slow Horses or he's now doing the theatre now. Doing Crap's Last Tape.
Yes.
If you look on the poster, it's, you know, exec produced by Douglas Zabowski. His name's always thrown on everything. So anyway, so Douglas always answers, saying, thank you, but no. You know, Gary's busy. Gary's doing something. And it's always a no. And so it's one of these, you know, quirks of nature. Early this year, a lovely actress called Shona McCarthy, out of the blue, Instagrammed a DM. She slid into my DMs, and she said, "Oh, I'm a young actress. I think you're great. You know, I know I'm not that famous, but will you photograph me, please? Because I think you're great, and it'd be great for a portfolio." So I looked into her, and she's in EastEnders. And I thought, well, yeah, why not? You know, she come across as a young, bubbly, you know, who I think would be fun to photograph. So I said, yeah, why not? And so she come to the shoot, come to me here in Mayfair, we're on base. And we've done the shoot, we got on like a house on fire. And she said, oh, is there anyone you want to photograph you haven't done yet? And I said, well, there's one person, Gary Oldman. Oh, should I ask him? Pardon? So yeah, I'm best friends with his sister. And of course, his sister was in Miss Enders, Big Mo. And I completely forgot that. So she told me, do you want me to find Mo and ask her? Because even though her name isn't Mo, everyone calls her Mo in real life. I said, okay. Now, bear in mind, I'm used to people saying things and not going through. I was like, that'd be lovely if you would. Yes. And an hour later, Mo's going to go and see him at the weekend. She'll ask him if he can write a letter to email her, you know, all the details, what he want, why he wants it. And that weekend, Mo phoned me up. Yeah, Gary said, but pop along. And what's lovely, what I adore about this is I waited so long. And sometimes I approach an actor and you have to go via a publicist or something.
Yes.
And if they're doing a movie, they're in production and the headspace is there, and you know, you get that. But Gary was doing Crap's Last Tapes up north and at theatre. And he said, do me on a Saturday. I'll do the matinee. I've got a tour break. Then I've got the evening performance. I'll do you in between. And so that's how lovely it was. I mean, he did have to go into some headspace. He just said, yeah,
was it come York Theatre Royal you went to? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And he was so lovely.
And may I just congratulate you for your tenacity, your patience, and your story arc of inception to completion is just such a beautiful testament. And in the meantime, I don't doubt, I mean, anyone watching, if you look at andygotts.com, you'll fall off your chair. And I don't doubt that you just need to send the website to someone. Can I photograph you? And just whilst we're talking about asking questions, you were so lovely because I'm trying a similar experiment because I'm calling this the Good Listening to Show Stories of Distinction and Genius. I don't know if you remember, but I tried, you're the first time I tried a really quick pickup line, metaphorically. I think you're a bit of a genius. Can I please record you? And you very, very wittily got in touch.
Yeah,
and
I am.
Said, I am a bit of a one. When would you like to record? And I love that because there's a synergy there because I am on a similar, different, equivalent path. There's a lovely allegory of the Helsinki bus garage, a story I can bore you about anon, but it's about stay on the flipping bus, stay on the flipping bus, keep going, keep going, keep going. And I love the fact that despite, you know, complete infamy and success, because, you know, the actors you've got, you know, Kate Winslet talks about you being her favorite photographer. You mentioned Al Pacino as number one. Anyway, just check out the website. But I just love the fact that you, I'm trying to get famous doing this too, but I just love the fact that in a parallel universe, I just tried a facetious line. It wasn't who's shagging who, as you said, you nearly went on.
Never chase fame. Never chase fame.
Tell us more. That's beautiful. Yes.
Right. No, but it's true. I mean, I'm so lucky I do a job I love. And I'm so lucky that I do a job that I daily work with my acting heroes. And there's only a slim number of photographers who are in the position.
Yes.
But I find looking around at my peers, they see themselves as they are famous too. And I don't. I'm doing a job. I go to work. I do a job. I don't court the red carpet. I don't court the spotlight. I mean, I don't want that. This is why I really do interviews. I really do stuff. I have the luxury of doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
But I'm a photographer. I'm not a celebrity. And that's how I see myself.
May I now, with your permission, get you on the open road? And I'm really, really excited to do this, to curate you through the unique storyscape of the Good Listening Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. If you haven't seen this show before, where have you been? Not you, Andy. This is me talking to the broader audience. I've done about 300 of these monkeys. Where have you been? But this is the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into a clearing or serious happy place of my guests' choosing as they arrive to share their stories of distinction and genius. It involves a clearing or your serious happy place that we'll talk about in a minute, a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So just before we get you on the open road of asking you where your clearing is, just please tell us the story of why you're called One Shot Gotts, Andy Gotts.
I'm known for shooting very, very quickly. And that's because when I first started my career, I had to shoot in junkets, movie junkets. And so for the people who don't know what junkets are, if a movie comes out, let's say, I don't know, The Godfather, for example, the production company would hire two suites in the Dorchester Hotel or hotel similar, rooms side by side. Then in room A, there'd be people from This Morning or The Guardian or whatever in there to do the interview.
Yeah.
And then exactly 10 minutes, there's people there with a stopwatch, 10 minutes. Yeah. Then after 10 minutes, the talent go to the next room to ask exactly the same questions. And in room A, they take it out. Another people are brought in. So every 10 minutes, they go room to room to room all day and being asked the same questions. So for the first 8 years of my life, I had to go into a junket space, set up, do my shoot, break down, and leave the room before a big burly man come in and pulls you out. Yes. So that's why I learned to shoot really quickly. There's no messing around. I go into a shoot knowing what I want and get it. And so my career progressed and I was doing quite well. And then Paul Newman said, you know, I've seen your work. You're an amazing photographer. please, would you come to Connecticut? And I think on a Thursday, and come to my home and we'll do a shoot. And I'd absolutely, Mr. Newman, because he was my hero. Out of the galaxy of stars, he was up there. Perfect. So I did. So I went all the way to Connecticut with my two bags, my light bag, my camera bag, turned up at his lovely house. I could hear some laughing and joking going on in the room next door, and a little head come out saying, I'll be 1 minute, I'm just saying goodbye to some friends. Thank you, Mr. Newman. So set up the backdrop, set up a light, the doors open, out come Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman as they waved as they went past. And Paul came in, or Mr. Newman came in, and sat down and said, okay, kids, how do you want me? And I said, well, I know exactly the shot I want. I promise I'll be quick. I think, you know, we'll be done just in a few minutes. He said, listen, son, I've been shot by the best. The best. You guys say you'll be a few minutes, you're hours. So, you know, I said, Mr. Newman, I promise you. 4 minutes later, I'd done. I said, Mr. Newman, we're finished. He said, that's impossible. I said, here are the Polaroids. He went, you really are one-shot gots. And that's how I got my nickname, given by Paul Newman himself.
And ladies and gentlemen, notice, if you will, how Andy Gotts has turned up and made that his name today, One Shot Gotts, which I didn't know until you turned up, which is so exciting. A little bit of wee. That's absolutely fantastic.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so let's get you on the open road of this. Go how you like, where you like, as deep as you like into this structure. Andy Gotts, what is your clearing or your serious happy place? When are you absolutely at your happiest, and where is that?
I'd say, probably you've had this answer before, but it's my man cave. And it's where I am right now. Yeah. And the reason is, because I'm a one-man band, I don't have any staff or anything, I feel and I've felt I need to be in an environment that I'm happy with. So I've turned my little office into a movie man cave. And so I've been collecting movie memorabilia for years. So around me, hidden from view, I've got stuff from Star Wars and James Bond and Lord of the Rings and Home Alone and Die Hard and Harry Potter, all stuff that was used in the movies that I've winkled and picked and stolen and been given over the years. And so I sit here and look around me and I see in the corner, you know, a full-size stormtrooper from the original armor from A New Hope. Is this over there? And behind me there is an Iron Man helmet. An actual helmet. This is my happy place.
May I say, as you ducked then, I couldn't help noticing, and I want to talk about this as well, the Monty Python picture as well. In your equivalent universe of Paul Newman being your all-time hero, Michael Palin is my all-time comic hero. in the same vein as Stan Laurel. You know, if Stan Laurel was still alive, a bit like Gene Hackman for you, I'd love to have met. I was only three when he died, actually, but I'd love to have met Stan Laurel. But Michael Palin has said yes to being in this show recently. I'm just trying to get a date because he keeps slipping away from the date. A bit like the Gary Oldman. What's the Gary Oldman lovely man called, who was the gatekeeper?
Douglas Abowski.
I love that. So in a universe of no, there's also a universe of yes, which I love because you kept going, even though he said no quite a few times.
Yeah.
So please talk us. You've done the Monty Python reunion a few times, haven't you?
Yes. So what happened is over the years, I'd shot all Python separately. And I've become quite chummy with Eric Idle because his daughter, she wanted to be a photographer. And now she is a photographer. And so we started up a friendship. And I was over in Berkeley in California because Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart were over there together. And Patrick was getting married. And Ian was ornated as the minister to marry Sonny and Patrick. So I went over to photograph the stag do. And so I was over there and the phone went, and it's Eric. And I said, Andy, it's Eric. I said, Eric Idle. I said, oh, hi, Eric. Do you still work in Mayfair? I said, yeah. And he said, do you fancy a little thing? I've got a little thing I think you might be interested with. I said, okay, tell me more. He said, can you be back here for Tuesday? I said, no, I'm in California. And he said, I think, you know, it'd be worth your while. I said, well, tell me. He said, well, every 7 years, Python get together and talk about finance. Because the money still is rolling in from, you know, residuals and everything.
Yeah.
And he said, every 7 years we get together, we look at the books, we look at where the money is going. And he said, we're all now of an age, we can't think there's going to be many more get-togethers. Would you mind coming and just doing a few photos of us all? He said, we're hardly ever in a room together. Will you come and do some photos? I said, of course, round a table. I thought, that won't happen. So I said, where is it going to be? He said, the Duke's Hotel, just in Mayfair. So I said, okay. So I arranged to meet there. So I phoned up the hotel and I said, I know there's a meeting happening at the end of the week on Tuesday. Do you have another empty space I could use for a studio? So behind their back, I created a little studio. And so I went to do their thing, them sitting around signing papers and, you know, doing that. Then at lunchtime, I said, gents, I've got a little studio downstairs. How about we just go and do some formal shots? And everyone was very happy, apart from Cleese, who rolled his eyes. Oh, really? Do we have to? It's lunchtime. I'm hungry. And I said, and it'd be fun. And so we went down and I did the shoot. And during the shoot, a conversation happened between the Pythons saying, okay, so we're being sued. So apparently Spamalot was someone else's idea. And it was taken to court and it was proved to be, it was this guy's idea. And so they had to pay him, I think, 2.4 million or something. It's ridiculous. And so this conversation happened in front of me. And so I was going, click, how do you raise the money to pay off this guy? And I think Terry Jones said, as a joke, let's put the band back together and do a show. And everyone laughed and it was kind of talked over. And so we finished the photo shoot. We all shook hands, said goodbyes, and I went home. The next day, the phone rang, and it was Eric. I went, Andy, yeah, Eric Idle. Oh, Eric. He said, who have you told about that meeting we had in the shoot yesterday? I said, no one. He went, don't. I went, okay. He said, I can't tell you why. I'll call you next week. Just don't tell anyone it's happened. I said, okay. Apparently, over the next 3 or 4 days, they all individually sacked their management. They unified under one umbrella. It was the guy, Queen's producer. His name has escaped me, but they had a producer who done like Bohemian Rhapsody, and then he helped them get into Live Aid. So the head, Jim Beach is his name. So they'd hired Jim Beach to be the official spokesperson for Python because they were going to reform and to do a show. And he said, no. Eric said, no one's going to know. It's going to be a surprise. We're going to do one night at the Hammersmith Apollo, and no one can know for 6 months. Don't tell us all, but we need photo shoots done. So we'll meet you at 3 o'clock in the morning at Duke's, and we'll all come in separate cars, and we'll all, and so that's what we did over the course of months.
Wow.
So there's only 8 people who knew about the Python reunion, and I was one of them. Wow. And then I'd done this lovely shot of them all as the character, the Gumby. So the knotted hanky and little moustache my brain hurts. No, that character. And apparently they'd never all done that character since the Hollywood Bowl 40 years previously. And they never done it in the reunions. I'm the only person to have seen them all in this character. And that was the last ever photograph taken of Python, because when they were on stage, they announced they've retired. There will never, ever be another Python. Python have ceased to be the breath of life. They rest in peace. That's it. So that photograph is the last ever shot of Python. And so that's why I am very, very proud of myself.
And Andy Gotch, you have an extraordinary knack of being in the right place at the right time with the right thing happening. May I ask you what you dream about? Because you've got Paul Newman, hi Paul. You've got Tom Cruise, hi Tom, Nicole, and then you've got the Pythons. So what do you dream about?
I dream about, you know, peace and quiet. I suppose when I do let my mind go, because I used to tell my mum off a lot. I said, I was born 10 years too late. But when I first started in the early 90s, and I just started getting a few names, a few of my icons started dying off. People like Jimmy Stewart, people like, the Duke,
John Wayne.
All these guys started passing away. And I said, if I was born a few years earlier, maybe he could have got, because it was Stephen Fry told me this story, but he went to see James Stewart when he was a young boy. He was doing the Harvey play in the West End. And Stephen was waiting at the stage door waiting for an autograph. And he said, Jimmy Stewart come out and ruffle his hair. I was like, how are you doing, kid? And Stephen said that was the highlight of his entire life, meeting Jimmy Stewart. When I let my mind, I wish I'd have, could have done a few of the old guys before they went, I suppose.
And may I ask, have you photographed Bryan Cranston yet?
I have, absolutely.
Because I went to see him in the show and I left a card for him in the stage door. So I'm hoping that, like your call 6 months later, I might get a call, because I've just planted the seed by doing a handwritten card. But who knows? The universe is a funny old place.
You know, that effect has happened. I mean, writing notes, handwritten notes, delivering to the stage door, that does work. It does. And so thinking outside the box and not doing what everyone does, go to a publicist or manager, the little extra special bits you do, normally pulls off. But Bryan Cranston was lovely. He was doing Network when I photographed him.
Yeah.
And he was such a joy. I mean, a bundle of energy and humor, and just a sweet guy. When you do a photo shoot of an actor, it's quite unique, because an actor has been shot 1,000 times before.
Yeah.
And they have their faces they go to. So being a photographer of actors, you have to do this very subtle thing. But if it's all them, all the pictures will look identical. So whenever you go on Google, they'll all look the same.
Yeah.
If it's all me and my projection, all my photographs will look the same. So I have to do 50%. They have to do 50%. Then you do this little dance in the middle to get something that's never been seen before. And so that's why I love doing a job where my operandus, the thing I'm there for, is to get something people haven't seen before of a famous face.
I love the dance of reciprocity that's implicit in that it's a 50-50. It's a relationship that you build very quickly by being one-shot gots. Lovely. Forgive me for going off what lovely, delicious tangents, but now I'm going to pull you back in. Your clearing is your man cave, you've beautifully described. And for those watching or those listening, you've got Michael Caine, Monty Python, and Kate Moss as the gallery we can see. Also, we need to appreciate your iconic, your sort of signature style is the wonderful black and white fabric and texture, which is just delicious. As I say, do look at the website. We'll come to show us your QR code at the end, and you will fall off your chair when you see actually who I'm speaking to. So Now we're in your man cave. I'm going to arrive with a tree in your clearing, which, talking about Patrick Stewart and Sir Ian McKellen, is a little bit Waiting for Godot-esque. I'm going to shake your tree existentially to see which apples fall out. How do you like these apples? Got a couple of props for you as well. And this is where you've been kind enough, Andy Gotts, to have thought about four things that have shaped you. And I appreciate you're giving us this by the bucket load in any case. Three things that inspire you. Two things that never fail to grab your attention, which is where a couple of squirrels are going to come in, borrow from the film Up. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real. But that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
It's not a memory test, but just to get you back into the canopy of your tree, Andy Gotts, what would you say four things are that have shaped you?
The go-to answer is going to be, number one, it's going to be my parents. That's an obvious answer, but there is a reason my parents was, I come from a very, very working class family. My dad was a milkman and my mum was a waitress. And so dad would leave for work at 3 o'clock every morning for like 40 years and go into the middle of Norfolk, in the middle of the countryside, putting 2 pints of silver top on people's doorstep for literally for years and years and years. He'd come home like midday, then go to sleep. And his work ethic, he never grumbled. He never moaned. It was, I do a job that I feel fortunate, but I'm surrounded by, I want to go into studios or go into hotels or go into other environments. People doing a job they don't like doing. And they're the first people to tell you they don't like their job, you know. Yeah. But my dad never complained. He enjoyed his job. He enjoyed meeting the people. Maybe that's what I like my job is. I like the meeting the people. But dad, I remember when I was 7, 8, 9, it was Christmas time, and we used to go and get the boxes to make hampers. My dad would deliver hampers as well as milk, and then I'd go around in the evening delivering the hampers, and then he'd get his little Christmas box from each of the, and you know, happy memories. And the winters, it used to snow in those winters, so I used to have to put the things on a sledge and a crate of milk and pull around the avenues to deliver them. It's happy memories. It's the work ethic of, and the devoted housewife of mum, how she devoted and looked after us as a family. So I think they absolutely shaped the person I am. And I wouldn't be the person I am if it didn't have parents who had to work for every single penny to give their children. Some Christmases, they'd saved all year to get a small present for us, you know, and things like that. They couldn't afford luxury. They couldn't afford big things. But the fact is they gave me and gave my brother what they could. And it was love and it was a family and it was stability and it was being honest. And I think Mark Twain said, if you're honest, you never have to recall a thing in your life. And it's true, you have to be an honest person. And I think that's what mum and dad gave to me. So that's number one in my list.
I bet you can't hear the clink of two milk bottles or the sound of an electric milk without thinking about your dad. Is he still with us?
And unfortunately not. I mean, but what happened is, I mean, lockdown happened. So that was 6 years ago now in 2020. And he got poorly during lockdown. So I didn't see him for 18 months. Oh. And during that time, he got cancer. And I didn't know, because mum and dad, you know, don't tell the boys that attitude, you know, yeah. they'll army spirit. Don't tell the troops. And then he got poorly. Then his cancerous tumour ruptured. And then he was given like days to live. And that's when I was allowed to break lockdown and go and see him.
Yeah.
And then the unfortunate thing is he died in November. So the following November, my brother and I and mum, we're getting together to commemorate dad. And we lost mum exactly a year to the day. And we lost mum. And so unfortunately, they both went very, very soon. But the thing is, as I said, mum was a devoted housewife. And I saw mum every weekend when dad passed away. The first thing mum said to me was, "I miss you, dad." Every weekend I met her. And so she wanted to be with dad. So she didn't have to wait that long. So that's the blessing.
Did she last to do the ceremony to mark the year since he passed? Or was it
literally? No, it was literally a couple of days before. But I was with dad when he passed away. I was literally sitting by his bed when he passed away. And I was sitting next to mum's bed when she passed away. I mean, that's a good thing. And the last thing dad said to me was, he's proud of me. The last thing mum said to me was, she loves me. So, you know, I can go on my merry way knowing my parents are proud of me and they loved me. So what else does a man need in his life, really?
Beautiful storytelling. And I just have to also mention the idea of putting milk bottles down, silver top, gold top, in the snow. Apart from the gold bit there, it's a bit like the world's in black and white, which is then informing the wonderful signature photography that you do so beautifully.
Yeah. Just to say, just to keep on the milk chop thing, this is how lovely my dad was. On hot days, when the blue tits would come and tap on every single bottle of milk, he'd get stones and put on the bottles so the birds couldn't get the cream. That's the kind of guy he was.
Oh, lovely. Beautiful. I'm just deliberately allowing a pause there. And now the second thing that shaped you, please. One shot gots.
Okay, so it's a gentleman called Dr. Leach. And so Dr. Leach was somebody I met by complete fluke and accident when I was 18. And I was doing a job I didn't like doing. And this gentleman said, "You don't look very happy." I'm not very happy. He said, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I said, "I really would love to be a photographer." And this gentleman said, "I teach photography at a private school in Holt. You're the same age as my sixth formers. If you want to, Saturday mornings, I do hobbies. Come along and I'll teach you with my pupils Saturday mornings." So for 6 months, I went to see Dr. Leach. And he taught me the fundamentals of photography. He taught me how to light a scene, how to do darkroom work, how to pre-flash paper, how to develop a film, how to use flash and strobe and continuous light. And that September, the first ever college course in photography happened. It was called a BTEC National Diploma in Design Photography. And it was the first one, and it was in King's Lynn. And they were looking for 15 people throughout the UK to guinea pig this course.
Yeah.
As a Dr. Leach wrote to the dean of NORCAT, the North College in King's Lynn, the Norfolk College. And he said, "You know, I've got this kid with me. He's not a student. He's not academically gifted. But he has something special about him. And if you're looking for someone to guinea pig this course," and on the strength of that letter, they took me on. I was one of the 15 they'd chosen. And that's how my photography path started. So I owe most of what I've done to Dr. Tony Leach from Holt.
And is Dr. Tony Leach from Holt still with us?
I believe so. I believe, because he used to be a teacher at Gresham School in Holt. I believe he then became an honorary member of staff when he retired. And I think now in the community, he does things around the community and the local church. I think and I hope he's still around on his bicycle, dotting around, making people's life a bit more happier.
And when did you last see him, if I may ask?
An awful long time ago, years ago, because I've not been back to Norfolk for a long while. But I'd say a good 10 years at least.
I would like to proffer a pilgrimage is in order. I think you should go back.
I think I should.
He knows what he did. Obviously, he knows what he did. And you are such a warm, generous human being. I'm sure you've thanked him already, but it would just be lovely to see you turn up again, I'm sure.
He knows. He absolutely knows. But because I talk about him a lot, so he knows, luckily.
Again, this is just wonderful. Thank you. And now the third shapage, if you like.
I'm not going to have to delve into my plethora of famous names, I'm afraid.
Please do.
Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry is why I'm sat here today. So I was at this college course, my two-year course, my BTEC National Diploma in Design Photography. Year one, you do all photography. You do fashion, fine art, landscapes. Year two, specialised for the entire year, doing it as something. I was getting to the end of year one. It was all nice. There was nothing I felt I could give an entire year to. And I was this close in saying, maybe this isn't for me then. And Stephen, who lived in Kingston or South Wootton at the time, he came to give the end of year diplomas out. If you think back to 1989,
yeah,
he was a megastar. Because there was only four TV channels. There wasn't Sky and Cable. There was the four terrestrial channels. He was doing Jeeves and Wooster, Blackadder, Fry and Laurie. He's getting 28 million viewers per show. He's a mega monster star.
Yeah.
And he was going to come to give it the diplomas. And so I knew where he'd be in the art block doing a Q&A. So the room next door, I set up a backdrop and a light and a camera and went to his Q&A session. And I sat and I waited and I thought, oh, here we go. Yes, boy at the back. Mr. Fry, could I please do a picture of you next door? He rolled his eyes and said, will you be quick? I promise you, I'll be very, very quick. He gave me 90 seconds. I took 10 photographs, changed my life. It was that eureka, that boom, that moment. Everything made sense. I got this person who was iconic, being stupid for me, doing what I asked him to do, doing things I didn't ask him to do. Just, I was an audience of one with this famous person. And it was like, you know, a drug. And it was phenomenal.
You're so good at whispering curmudgeonly people. You describe John Cleese as being, oh, do we have to? And Stephen Fry, oh, he's not curmudgeonly, I know. But I love the fact that you broke through that in both cases and then did something absolutely iconic, which is fantastic.
And what's lovely is because he talks so much, he went back into the Q&A, and that gave me time to the dark room, develop the one reel of medium format film, but that had nine photographs on it. I looked at these notes, and then there's Stephen. He's the first one who'll tell you hasn't been gifted with looks, because he's got this broken nose,
yeah.
And it wasn't through talent. It wasn't through, it was a luck, a shadow fell across his face. So you couldn't see the break. I thought, oh, that's a nice shot. So I quickly done a 10 by 8, went yeah. back to his Q&A, and as he was leaving, I gave him the 10 by 8 as he was leaving. And he said, well, my dear fellow, this is just outstanding. Can I have your phone number in case, you know, in case I use it for something down the line? So he gave him my Diggs phone number, because I was staying in a house of other reprobates at the time. As I said, so he gave him my Diggs phone number and thought nothing more of it. Now, apparently what happened was that weekend, he went home, put the photograph on his mantelpiece. His best friend came over for Sunday lunch, Kenneth Branagh, saw the picture, went, darling, who took that? You glorious, who took that? A young boy at college, do you have his number? Here's his number. And it was a Monday morning, or it was Monday afternoon, because I was laid in, because I'm a student. The house phone rang. Oi, God, Kenneth Branagh's on the phone. Yeah. So I got to the phone. Hello. Hi, Andy, it's Kenneth Branagh. How do you fancy coming to Highgate and shoot me and my wife, Emma Thompson? And I said, okay, when? He said, I think we're both free beginning of next week. No. I'd passed my driving test 3 weeks before.
Well done.
So I drove from King's Lynn to Highgate at 30 miles an hour along the A11 and M11. Because sort of getting to, and it took me a whole day to get there. I got to their road, literally a nervous wreck, because I'd never driven out of Norfolk before. And this road was all cars parked everywhere. There's nowhere to park. And there was someone's drive. I thought, I'm just going to park my car. I don't care. I'm just going to park my car. And it's parked. Turn the car off. And I just sat there. Then I heard this voice. Who are you? What do you want? What? Who are you? This old man can run out of his house. And I was there nearly in tears saying, I've come from Norfolk to photograph Kenneth Branagh and I don't know what to do and where to park. And he started laughing. And he said, tell you what, you can park here all day if you photograph me afterwards. I said, pardon? He said, oh, yeah, I've just done a TV program, Catfile, Derek Jacobi. So Derek, who's friends with Ken and Emma, walked me down, he carried my bags, walked me down to Ken's house, laughing. He said, look what I found. He's parked his car in my driveway. And these are his bags. Look, I'm carrying them. And sat down. So I shot Ken and then shot Emma and then shot Derek. And they thought it was great. And he said, oh, so who are you shooting next? Oh, well, I've got no one planned. I just went to Bob Hoskins. So shall I give him a call? Okay, so he got Ken's house phone, called up Bob Hoskins, and literally that is how my career started.
Wow.
Thank you to Stephen Fry. So that's why he is on my little list, because if it wasn't for Stephen Fry, I would not have started my path that led me here today.
And you're still in touch with Stephen Fry, I'm sure.
Monthly. We have an email or phone call monthly just to check in with each other. And that is 36 years later.
Oh, this is delicious. You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the Series Strands, at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, please do so. And if you'd like to have some coaching with me, care of my Personal Impact Game Changer program, then you can contact me and also about the show at chris@secondcurve.uk. On X and Instagram, it's @thatchrisgrimes. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.